Welcome to the Dental Business Guide podcast. From money to marketing to management, this podcast will help you run a better dental business.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our talk on buying the freehold of your lease. Today, I'm joined by Dan and Nigel from Samara Finance. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're good, Chris.
Excellent. It's good to see you both again. Right, so let's jump right into it. For my own knowledge, so what is the difference between leasehold and freehold in a nutshell?
Right, in a nutshell, the difference between leasehold and freehold is a leasehold you are renting, and therefore you pay a rent every year, and that rent will probably go up in stages, perhaps every 3 or 5 years until the end of the lease, at which point you would have to renew the lease. And there are certain protections that you can have to enable you to renew that lease and not lose it. But obviously with a freehold, very much like a house, you own the property, it's yours until you sell it. And it enables you to probably not just do what you want to the property, but you don't need to ask anyone's permission. If you want to make changes, you just have to get planning permission.
Right.
So that's the main advantages.
And will a freehold often include the land on which the building is built?
Yes, it will.
Right, okay. Fair enough then. Right, so are freeholds available at the moment?
Generally, yeah. I mean, it depends where you are in the country. So if you're in central London, then the answer is there's not a lot of these, not a lot of freeholds around. They're mostly leaseholds.
Yeah.
But if you're outside London, then there can be freeholds available. One of the things I think both Dan and I find is when people are looking at a leasehold, they seldom ask if the freehold's available. Because very often the seller owns the freehold. Now, initially, they might not want to sell it, but when they realise how much it's actually worth, they might want to sell it. And also, just putting that idea into their head makes a big difference. You know, do you want to sell it? And probably there are more freeholds becoming available around the country, mainly because shops and offices and, you know, they're becoming more vacant. You know, high streets are becoming less occupied, more occupied by service industries. So there's every opportunity, especially if someone owns, let's say they own 4 or 5 shops in a row and 3 of them are vacant. You've got to look at that and say, well, they're not getting any rent. So they might be willing to sell one. So it's always worth asking. And yes, they are available, but it depends on your area.
Yeah. Right. And so when you say it's worth asking, do you mean if you're already in a leasehold and you're already renting the property for your dental practice, to ask your landlord whether they're interested in selling it?
Yeah, if you're already leasing, you can ask. And if you're trying to buy, you can ask. You know, sometimes not a lot of good asking the agent who's selling. But, you know, if you're in contact with the owner of the property or the dentist themselves, or, you know, whoever owns the property, pharmacy, vet, whatever, they, you know, ask who owns the property. Because it might turn out it's them or their parents.
Yeah, and you might have a situation if they're buying the practice, it might not be at that moment in time they're in a position to buy the practice. But like Nigel says, you could always plant that seed and say, like, in the next sort of 3 to 5 years, you know, would you be interested in selling the freehold to me? Then that's a way of doing it if you can't afford it at that moment in time. But also, we've had situations where people have a leasehold and they have tried to buy the freehold where they are, but that's not available. But they've also looked around close to where they're based and taken the opportunity to buy a freehold close by and move the practice to that location. So that's another option that they can look at if they do want the freehold and have that asset. Then, you know, there are other shops, like Nigel said, available, because the high street has changed so much over the last few years, and, you know, there will be spaces available.
Okay, so when you say when you buy a practice or a pharmacist and you're trying to buy the freehold, are you saying that sometimes when you buy the business, you're not also buying the building itself or the land that's built, and you're just buying the business?
No, if it's a leasehold business,
right,
then,
right.
Then you are buying the business and you are just leasing the premises. So right. Basically, if you do it as an analogy to residential, you're renting your flat.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's a lot of people look at that as money wasted. And the fact is, at the beginning, it may be that the to buy it is more expensive than the rent. But what you've got to look at is what's the rent going to be at the end of the 15 years?
Yeah.
If I mean most of these leases, their clauses say upward rent only when at review, so they're not going down in price.
Yeah.
At best, they're going to stay the same. At the worst, they're going to go up every 5 years or 3 years even. So, you could end up by the end of 15 years paying more in rent than you would have done to actually repay the freehold.
And you won't have that asset at the end of, you're making your loan repayments on the freehold. At the end of those loan repayments, you own that freehold. With your rental, it's going off to pay the other person's loan, in effect.
Or lifestyle, yeah.
Or lifestyle, exactly. Depending on their financial position. Yeah.
Yeah, the joys of renting. So what other benefits are there to buying the freehold? I mean, we talk about owning the assets and the rent going up, possibly. What are there any other ones that you can think of?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, lenders will lend you the money for a freehold over 20, 25 years on average, sometimes a bit longer. If you're buying the practice at the same time, they will often then give you 20 years to repay the purchase price of the practice as well, whereas if it's leasehold, it'll be a maximum 15 years. So that extra 5 years would bring down your costs on purchasing the actual business quite considerably. So it's always worth looking at, and what I think both Dan and I will say to people, well, look at it. The fact is that on most freeholds, when you're buying a premises for and you're buying an existing practice, the lenders will give you 100%. So you haven't got to put a deposit down.
Yeah.
And that's a huge advantage, because, if you're doing a startup, for instance, any sort of startup business, the banks would only lend you 70%. So being an owner-occupier, it gives you the advantage of them lending you all the money, so you don't have to put any money in yourself for the freehold. So you only got to find the money for the purchase of the business. You get the extended term, and you get the extended term for the actual business as well.
Okay, so they'll lend over a longer period of time. You can get the 100%. So how should you structure the actual purchase then?
Well, you're going into the realms of accountancy here. This is where you need a really good accountant. And if you're a dental pharmacist or vet, you need someone who specialises in healthcare. Mm-hmm. So, but the advantages are quite simple, really, because you can, the way most people do this, as a general rule, is they would set up two limited companies. They would buy the freehold in one limited company and buy the actual business in the other limited company, or trade in the other limited company as a partnership or sole trader. Mm. And that gives you the advantage that obviously you don't pay rent anymore, but what you will do is obviously pay between the two businesses to cover the loan on the freehold.
Yeah.
So you're still in effect making a contribution. Now the good news there is that your rent would come off your profit and loss, which reduces the amount of tax you have to pay. Mm-hmm. And if you've got the limited company for the property, the interest can be offset against the profit and loss, and again reducing any tax you would have to pay. So this is where you have to get into a good accountant. So this is where you might have managed with your dad's friend's neighbour for years, because you were an associate or you were employed by someone just to do a tax return each year. You're now talking about a serious business and you need serious advice. And really, if you don't structure it right at the beginning, you will make a mess of it, because it has to be done at the beginning. If you try and change it 6 months in, not only will the lenders be quite unhappy with you, they might want to restructure the whole loan again and charge you another fee.
Yeah, and so extra solicitors' costs as well. You have extra costs.
So if you do it all in one go, it makes sense. And to get the right advice at the outset, and I think Dan and I have always said to people, whenever we've done talks or in the meetings with individuals, if you use professionals who know what they're doing, you will get the best advice. Don't use someone who does residential mortgages, because you're talking about a business premises, and it's more involved, it's more difficult, And the same with accountants. You know, you want someone who can advise you about what's the pros and cons of doing this. What's the best way to do this?
And I suppose also as well, Nigel, if someone sets it up as two separate companies, once you get to, you know, your exit point, so you get to that period where you've maybe had enough of being a dentist, or, you know, you don't want to work there anymore. If you've got the separate structure, what you can do is sell that limited company that does the trading business and then keep the freehold separate. But if you're trying to unpick that towards the end and trying to sell the business, it will get messy and obviously more costly for you. So if you get that structure right in the first place, you could keep the freehold, continue getting your rent, sell the business, and it's a nice clean structure to do it.
Yeah, and you can get a nice little income from the rent.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, you become one of the landlords having other people fund your lifestyle.
Exactly. What goes around comes around.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like I'm going to have to get the accounts team on to do a whole other series on this, on structuring it now. So yeah, it's definitely going to be one for the future. Watch this space. Right. So banks, I know things have been a bit weird over the last few years. Are they still lending?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they still lend. They still lend for the right deal.
Yeah.
And it has to be. I suppose the easiest way of saying it is that they become more focused. They become a little bit more fussy.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants the perfect deal. They are very rare. Nothing's ever perfect. Mm. But yeah, they'll still lend. As I say, they'll do 100% on property. They'll do, you know, 80% on a practice purchase or a pharmacy purchase. You know, and they'll do 70% for startups. So they're still out there. They're still doing both secured and unsecured lending. And they're still in the market. It's very competitive because healthcare is a very good industry for lenders. Mm. You know, default rates are very, very low. So therefore they attract better interest rates, they attract a good lending appetite.
I think, like you say, Nigel, I think all the healthcare sectors are still very much green within times, like with lenders. So it does help in terms of when they're looking at the applications. And like Nigel was saying, they are a little bit pickier. They are asking for extra information, but still very much lending. And obviously we're doing a number of applications for people trying to buy the freeholds. So, you know, purchasing new practices and buying the freeholds.
Okay, well, talking about applications and what you need to take them forward, what kind of documents, information, facts and figures are people going to need if they want to look at buying their freehold?
Well, if they want to buy their freehold, obviously the first thing is that it's got the ability to be repaid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds so simple, but a lot of people don't think like that. A lot of people look at the asset value and say, oh, that's a marvellous asset value, but don't look at how much it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're buying a £300,000 or £400,000 freehold, as opposed to buying a £2 million freehold, there's a big difference in cost.
Mm.
So you've got to be careful. So it's a question of the lenders will want to look at what profit the business makes,
mm-hmm.
how that profit will be distributed between the owner of the business, because obviously he needs to get paid for doing the work, and also the bank. And they will build in certain things into that, and they will build certain buffers and sort of reservations in there to protect them and to protect the owner. So, you know, these are all things that I suppose we understand because we used to work for banks and we deal with banks all the time. Mm. But there are things other people don't understand. They don't understand that they think that if the rent or the business can afford just to cover the mortgage, that's okay. But no, in most cases, the banks will want that covered 1.5, 1.25 times, because that buffer allows for interest rates to go up even further.
Mm.
And not hurt the business. So, yeah, and if you're buying a business without the freehold, obviously they require a huge amount of information, because obviously they're going to lend it unsecured. So it's lent on trust, in effect. So they want to know a lot about the person. And we have a pack that we put together for banks, very similar to the one we used when we were in banks. And we package that up and we put it all together. And then we will write a full application. Both Dan and I wrote full applications. If you don't just send the bank your name and your phone number and ask them to give you a ring, which I know does happen, but it used to happen to us at the bank. but, you know, we package it all up. We write the application and we write it in the format that they need it. for their own credit team. So, and we don't hide from things. I think the worst thing you can do is if you've got an issue, so I know a good issue on a freehold, but it's a grade two listed building. But then you've got to get permission to do things from the local council or the local preservation societies. So you've got to take those sort of things into account. So, yeah, you just got to look at those sort of things. And it's about putting all that together so that when the bank are looking at it, they can go, yeah, we can do this. Rather than them start coming back asking loads of questions and not understanding what you've put in front of them.
So how much more likely, just off your own experience, how much more likely do you reckon it would be for your application to be accepted if you go through someone like us, financial brokers who know how to package the application, who know how to negotiate, or if you do it yourself?
It's always a difficult one because a lot of brokers will tell people they get better rates and they've got more access and everything else. And the fact is that what we do is we package it better for banks.
Mm.
Now, if it comes in the right format, then that's obviously got more chance of being approved. In addition, we send it to people in banks who do that type of lending. Mm-hmm. So it's pointless sending a dental practice purchase or a vet's practice or a pharmacy to someone who does property, because they're not going to understand what's happening in the practice or the business. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to make sure you send it to the right people, it's packaged correctly, and that we're available to answer if they have got any questions. Well, most of the time, we can answer questions off the information. A lot of the issues are we do send an awful lot of information, and we are quite picky in that we understand what we want to receive as a bank.
Yeah.
So we send that in. The issue sometimes you have is that everything you send in isn't read properly or is a little bit skimmed. So you will get the odd question and you'll go, well, unfortunately, you can't go, well, if you read it, you'd know what the answer is, because unfortunately, it's not going to go down well. So you have to resend the document and say, this is in paragraph 5, this is on page 3, you know, so they can get the information. But yeah, I think basically we go to the right people. We have situations where people go to banks and they get declined. They go direct and they spend probably 2 hours being interviewed by the bank. They spend a load of work putting it all together and the bank declines them. And we've had, well, I think both Dan and I have had instances in the past where that very same bank has then lent them the money.
Yeah.
And that's because we've gone to the right people with the right format.
Yeah.
You know, it is about having the contacts. And between Dan and I, we worked for banks for 70 years. I know he doesn't look that old. But, you know, I mean, luckily he's 5 years older than I am. But, you know, so I suppose the answer is we know what they want.
Yeah.
We know how they want it. And we know what they don't want. They don't want a 35-page business plan that's got loads of graphs and pictures and, you know, it's just been basically copied off Google and then run through AI.
ChatGPT.
Yeah, ChatGPT, you know, we work this for a bank, and ChatGPT doesn't know what a bank is or, you know, what a healthcare case is, so they just rewrite it. And but they want 3 or 4 pages in the business case. They want it to be concise. They want it to be accurate. And again, they want it in a certain format. You know, it's no good being writing 4 pages of information in 1 paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone's going to have to sit and read it.
Yeah.
And they're not going to read that.
And I think also as well, like you mentioned, Nige, about the time that a bank would take to look at it. So I suppose if they go for a broker, obviously, one, we take a lot of that time, you know, away from this. So we will do that work and we will spend the time with the banks. But also what we'll do is we'll send it out to a number of banks at the same time. So when we go back to the client with an offer, it will be 5 or 6 different banks that have quoted for us. So the client can see the different loan to values that they'll look at, the rates they'll look at, the terms they can look at. So they get to see, you know, one, they're going to get a competitive rate and they can see the best terms. So if a client did that directly, went to ABC Bank 2 hours, then went to another bank 2 hours, another bank 2 hours, you know, that you're building up a lot of time. And you know, not a bit funny, dentists can earn a lot more money in 2 hours, you know, than speaking to a bank and maybe not getting the answer they wanted, or maybe not talking to the right person. So I suppose for us is obviously the experience in putting the case together, saving them a lot of time, and able to sort of present back to them, you know, the offers in the market, so they can make an informed decision of how they want to take it forward.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that if you go to a bank, any bank, it's not their duty to tell you that you can get a better deal somewhere else.
No.
Their job is to lend money. Yeah. So if they're going to lend it at 4 or 5% above base, they're not going to turn around and say, but if you went down the road to XYZ Bank, you'd get this at 2.5% above base. Sometimes...
That's not their job, is it?
Yeah. Well, no, they're like car dealers. And I hate that analogy, but the fact is the car dealer is going to sell you a car for 5,000. He's not going to say to you, if you go 200 yards up the road, this very same car, same year, is at 4,500. That's not their role. Whereas the role of a broker is to try and get you the best deal and get you a range of options.
Yeah.
Now, whether you pick the best deal is a case for the client, and we don't recommend. We don't recommend. Yeah. And I think it's very important that we don't recommend. We let the client choose. We all talk through the choices with them, because whilst all banks do exactly the same thing, they all do it differently.
Yeah.
So it's important, as I say to a lot of people, don't just look at the rate.
Yeah.
You've got to look at whether there's an early repayment charge. You've got to look at how many years it's over. Mm. You've got to look at what security that they want. You know, what are the other costs that are going to be incurred? Mm. So it's important to have a look at the whole thing. And I think to have a range of offers, it makes sense, you know, to go out and say, I suppose if you refer it to like a dentist, they put their prices up on their website. So people can compare prices before they go in. They can look at 5 different dentists if they want. If price is their thing that they're going to choose on, that's how they do it. You can't do that with banks.
Yeah. Quick question. You mentioned securities a couple of times and unsecured loans. Would the freehold itself not act as the security for the loan?
Yeah, it would for the freehold loan.
Right.
Yeah.
But as they're lending you 100%, it's of no value to if you're buying a practice, that would be unsecured.
Right.
So basically, if you're buying a practice or business and it's on leasehold, you can normally get that unsecured. Yeah. But if you're buying it in a limited company, you would have to give such a thing as a guarantee, because it needs to tie you into the debt, and you'd have to give what's called a mortgage debenture, which is a charge on all the assets of the business. But you know, they're not actually asking you for bricks and mortar, but you know, security for an unsecured purchase.
No.
Okay, fair enough. Right, that's kind of everything I had in my head that I wanted to ask. Are there any final points from either of you?
I think I would just like to say to people, if you're unsure, you want some more information, give us a call. Book an appointment online. You can go through the website and book a telephone appointment. We do evening appointments, if that's easier, because we know that people are busy during the day. That consultation appointment, no charge. I know some brokers charge up front, which is we don't charge fees up front. We only charge fees when we've got you the deal.
Mm.
And I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, because, absolutely.
You know, if you don't buy this one, you're going to buy another one. And the fact is, you know, I think both Dan and I many times have told people, you really don't want to buy this one.
Mm.
It's not worth it. You know, there's nothing in it for you.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you paid the bank back, you're earning a third of what you're earning outside. So why are you doing this? You know. So I think that's important. We're not here just to peddle loans. That's not our role. We're still, I suppose, at heart, we're still quite bankers. And we're careful. You know, we're still.
Oh, don't be so hard on yourself. No, you're not.
I know. That's a terrible thing, isn't it? After all those years of being a banker, it's hard to get it out of your blood. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose like just what Nigel said earlier about using professionals, really. Yeah. Obviously, myself and Nigel have been doing this for a long time, so we know what we're doing. You know, if you're dealing with a solicitor, make sure, you know, they understand the sector. You know, they haven't just, oh, I'll do that one because, you know, I want a fee. There's a lot of things within healthcare that they will need to understand, and you don't want to be at a disadvantage of your solicitor not knowing what they're doing and the other solicitor knowing what they're doing. And obviously, the in terms of the structure side of things, the dental accountants, obviously it's Samira, we have dental accountants. So again, if you want a free consultation with someone to ask about, you know, what you're looking to do, you know, we'd be more than happy to you know, put you in touch with one of the accountants who go through structure, obviously payroll once you take over, because there's a lot of difference from being an associate getting your tax returns done than when you become, you know, a practice owner and, you know, you need more advice and there'll be more services that you need. And the last thing is that we've got a networking event on the 14th of September. It's a healthcare networking event. So it's based in London. So a good opportunity to come and meet us at Samira. We've also got some sponsors there as well. We've got Rudlin Solicitors who are coming along and Anglian Dental. So, you know, a lot of experience in the healthcare market. So, yeah, book yourself a ticket, come along. It'll be a great event and obviously a great way to sort of, you know, informally get to know everyone and pick up some advice in the sector.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that night. That's
yeah, I think it'd be a really good night. Good night.
Yeah. Right, guys, it was really good talking to you, and I'm genuinely looking forward to the next one. Can't remember which one's on the list, but keep your eyes out, everyone, because we're going to be doing a lot more of these little series on finance, accounts, managing money, that kind of thing. So thank you very much, guys. It was really good talking to you, and we'll see you both again next time.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot, everyone. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening in to the Dental Business Guide podcast. We welcome your feedback, and if you're enjoying it, please let your friends know too. Until the next time on the Dental Business Guide podcast.